is great to be joined live in the studio by Jen Hughes, who is the head of Racing Victoria's Equine Welfare. Jen, good to see you. Are you well?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, there's so much to discuss because this is one of the most important issues in racing. There's a lot of talk about it at the moment. Before we drill down on the welfare aspect, you would have been watching last night, along with all other horse lovers and racing lovers, the legend Andrew Hoy competing over in the Olympics. And I did note there are a few thoroughbreds that were competing as well over there in the eventing gold medal rounds.
Yeah, definitely. It was so good to watch. And Andrew's a massive advocate for off-the-track horses. He was actually out here a couple of years doing some clinics for the off-the-track program.
And if you were listening to RSN a few weeks ago, unfortunately I wasn't smart enough, but we know David Brightoak, who at one stage was the captain of the Australian equestrian team, he just missed out on heading to the Olympics. We tried to give the listeners a little bit of a tip with Andrew Hoy. Have a listen to what David Brightoak said about Andrew Hoy's chances in the Olympics 2 weeks ago.
Now, I believe that he's mounted on the best horse he's ever had.
Really? So
his chances are massive. He is probably going into this game with a better horse than he's had for his entire history.
Have you got a market on Andrew Hoy?
41 the gold, 14 the medal.
$14 to medal. Hopefully someone listened to David Brightoak, and his horse is just absolutely brilliant. He's the best looking Vasily de Lassos, who went around. So we'll probably have a chat to Andrew Hoy in the coming weeks, but well done. Team silver and individual bronze, two clean runs in the show jumping for Andrew Hoy as well. And just on the equestrian side, with the off-the-track and the retraining, what is the uptake and the interest in off-the-track thoroughbreds in the eventing world at the moment?
Strong. It's very positive. In fact, across all equestrian disciplines, we're seeing, even in this last year to 18 months, where events are being cancelled, there's still so much engagement. We're seeing a lot of programs going online. Some of our thoroughbreds competed internationally this year online, which is quite exciting. That's a sort of a new dimension to it. And every time we're renegotiating our sponsorships for off the track or expanding them, we had a new dressage series last year, which was hugely popular, which we'd like to build on again this year.
Mm. We'll talk about the money and how it's spent, but as far as retraining and finding suitable lives for the horses once they finish their racing career, how much goes into that? What does it take to successfully retrain a racehorse?
Well, that's a big question. It depends on the horse. It depends on the horse's history. We have a focus on ensuring that horses come to the end of their racing career with as many options as possible. And that's kind of twofold. So ensuring that the horses that come out of racing with limited options are as few as possible, but while also generating options for them. And that's where our post-racing framework has come in, is that generation of options.
So I suppose each horse is different, isn't it? It'd be like an individual. We're all different. So I suppose the length of time to retrain the horses, is it different for each individual horse as well?
Yes, definitely. So, and that comes down to a number of different factors, and a lot of them within our control or our participants' control. So every decision made from the decision to breed to the birth to weaning, pre-training, throughout training, everything that we do is leading up to a successful transition. So the transition phase can actually be made a lot smoother, a lot shorter, and a lot cheaper, if that's what's important to you, by making good decisions throughout the race, the horse's career. For example, we see horses, and I know a number of trainers are out there doing this, and it's really exciting to see, is during the pre-training, these horses are learning dressage. Mm. And then during their spelling time, they're going out and cross-training, and they're doing flat work and dressage, and maybe a little bit of jumping again. So when the time comes for that horse to transition, it's a very natural transition, rather than it being something completely new that they've never done.
We've spoken to a number of trainers who have done that, including Mick Price, Mick Kent Jr. and others, because they say it's actually an improvement for the horse. It keeps the muscles supple, and it teaches, I suppose, the muscles to move in a different way, which can help them on the track as well. Is that what we're starting to see, more prevalence of this seeping into normal regular training patterns?
Definitely.
As well.
Definitely. And there's no downside to it. Like you say, it helps the transition, and it helps them their racing career as well.
For a horse that enters a racing stable, as well as doing that dressage and that, what are things that can help improve that crossover and the likelihood of a horse to be able to transition successfully into life after racing as an off-the-track horse?
So we talk about having horses retiring from racing behaviourally, physically and behaviourally sound. So there are two elements to that. If we look at the physical element, it's ensuring that your veterinary practices and your spelling and your rest periods all support horses to be maintaining their soundness and retiring as sound as possible. And then behaviourally, you know, letting horses express their natural behaviours, these sorts of things allow them to be calm and relaxed, and therefore the horses that are then retiring are far easier to transition. Mm.
There's been a lot of talk about the amount of horses we breed, and Michael Kent brought this up when we had him on last week, and he wrote an article about it as well. I'd be fascinated to get your thoughts from the equine welfare point of view, and also what we need to do with the horses once they finish their racing life cycle. This is a snippet of what Mick had to say.
Well, they're making it killing, aren't they, at the moment? Surely they've got to have a responsibility with the welfare. We're all taking it on the welfare very seriously. We're taking it responsibly. We're trying to rehome our horses, do our best we can. I think they're the ones that need to step up to the plate there, I'm convinced. And don't breed out of roarers. Don't breed out of bleeders. Let's do spend some money on the genetics of the animal and see if we can't breed better. And let the stud book, why can't the stud book get involved here, or Ozhorse, who is promoting our thoroughbred? Collectively, we need to be better, because welfare is not just an issue for trainers and owners. It's going to be an issue for breeders as well.
A couple of different points there. First of all, do you believe the equine welfare is an issue for breeders as well, and maybe there should be some input from them?
Absolutely. They, as I sort of alluded to before, it's everyone's responsibility, shared responsibility. That early stage of a horse's life impacts not only their racing career but their post-racing career. So we talk regularly with TBV and starting to flesh out what we sort of use the phrase responsible breeding. What does that look like? And some of the things that are important to Racing Victoria's welfare team are ensuring that the number of horses bred is as close as possible to the number of horses that enter training, so that we don't have horses essentially retiring from racing when they haven't raced. So we're kind of decreasing the pool of retired horses at that stage. Again, as I mentioned before about having weaning and pre-training practices that set a horse up for success in both racing and post-racing. Things like making good decisions for breeding. When your mare retires, is that the best solution that the horse is to be a brood mare? Mm. Maybe it is, but equally, what we do find in our post-racing programs, and particularly with our reset program, is that a mare might be retired from racing at the age of 5, 6, 7 with excellent prospects to go into an equestrian career, but they go on to be a brood mare for, say, 5, 6 years. And then what we're then trying to rehome is a mare in her early teens that's been in the paddock for a few years. So being a broodmare might be the right decision, but it also is weighing up, if you're going to do that, are you taking on the responsibility of what happens when that broodmare retires as well? So lots of little things like that. And it's all around, we talk about just making good decisions that are based on what's best for the horse.
Some of the trainers, including Michael Kent, have been saying that maybe there should be a financial, I suppose, input from the breeders as well. 2% of prize money, which we'll talk the split of where that money goes into equine welfare. What's your thoughts on maybe breeders having a levy or something out of sales that can also go into that equine welfare fund?
I like the idea, and not necessarily from a financial perspective. It's about shared responsibility. So if everyone's contributing, everyone's responsible. Everyone is then has buy-in, and they then want the best outcomes, and they want to know how the money's being spent, and they want to make sure that the money's spent efficiently, so that we're not we don't have horses that are needing excess help because we haven't taken steps earlier on in their life.
Mm. Are you comfortable with the level of breeding we have, the amount of horses bred each year, or would you like to see it reduced further?
I don't have an opinion on the number of horses bred, but I do think that we want as many horses as many of the horses that are bred entering training and racing and achieving their purpose. So a lot of what we see in not just race horse welfare, but horse welfare, animal welfare. Animals get the best welfare when they achieve their purpose. They need to have worth for humans. And that's when we start to get into high-risk situations for welfare, is when animals don't achieve their purpose. And that's for me, is a good example of, yes, there are many reasons, there are many legitimate reasons why a horse may not make it into training or racing. But if we can get as many of those horses as possible achieving their purpose, at least their initial purpose, that gives them the best chance for the rest of their life.
With Jen Hughes, who is the head of Equine Welfare at Racing Victoria. And Jen, there's been a big shift in the last 18 to 24 months, really, in this space. What have we been able to achieve in that period, and what framework have you actually set down to ensure that it remains as important as it is moving forward?
Yeah, so we've had a strong focus on this in the last 18 months, in particular on the post-racing, part of a horse's life. In particular, we have developed our post-racing framework, which has got five principles, which is best for, it helps us explain what we're trying to achieve, and also helps guide us of where the investment should be, what initiatives do we need. So the first principle of the post-racing framework is a good transition. So we've talked about that a little bit. This, how do we ensure that horses have the best possible opportunity for transition? And within that pool, we already had our acknowledged retrainers, but what we realised is there was a gap there for horses that weren't being picked up by our retrainers, and that's where the reset programme comes in. So that's funded retraining by the welfare fund for horses that, for whatever reason, are slightly less desirable and weren't being picked up. So that might well be that they are a little bit older. We have some retiring broodmares in that group. We've got the horses that have been surrendered to the RSPCA have come through the reset program. So they're maybe in their early teens. They might have an old scar or an old injury that affects their perception of the perception of them as a successful equestrian horse, but there's actually nothing stopping them having that second career. So this funded retraining gives them that opportunity, and that's all in the post, in the transition space. And then the second principle is demand. How do we, well, we can transition them, but who wants them? So how do we create demand? And again, we already had the very successful off-the-track program, sponsored competitions, incentivizing equestrians to choose an off-the-track horse. But what we've built onto that is how do we create opportunities for the less competitive horses? And that's where we've engaged, we've had our partnership with the Riding for Disabled Victoria. We've so far rehomed one horse, and it was a reset horse to RDA. And we're starting to build on that relationship, find out what they need and how we can transition our horses in that space. And adding on to that, we've also developing in the equine therapy space. And one of our most recent initiatives is the Equine Business Grants Program. And that's new and quite exciting to us, because what we're starting to do is play in the space of what are the other jobs that horses or retired race horses do. So we're through that process. We've seven businesses have been successful, and they've got their trail riding schools, equine therapy. These are people that, for want of a better word, they employ horses. And how can we encourage them or incentivize them to choose an off the track horse rather than another horse?
When Cindy Alderson was in the studio, we had a trainers room last Thursday. I think she made a really valid point that a lot of people get a horse, they think a horse is a pet, and a horse is not a pet. It's very easy to rehome the greyhounds. The GAP program, which they do, is brilliant. But it's a lot more difficult to try and do that for all of the thoroughbreds. Traceability is a huge new focus as well. Have you got actual numbers now and stats on how many horses each year are ending their racing career that need to try and be rehomed and rehoused?
We have better figures than we had before. We've still got a long way to go. And visibility is actually another one of our principles for post-racing. The first step there is that obviously it's within the rules of racing that managing owners, trainers are required to retire their horse on the racing systems. And for the last 2 years, we've been around the 2,500 mark, horses retiring. I would say that we're not wholly confident that that is all of the horses that are retiring. So we've still got some paperwork issues that I suppose if there's anything I would like people to know, is that the importance of that it might seem like admin to you, but actually letting us know which horses are retiring helps us shape our programs. So there's that element. So we know that. We know that our acknowledged retrainers rehome about 500 horses a year. The reset program is just getting up and started. We've had 34 horses through there in the last 12 months. 15 of them have been rehomed. But what we're trying to do in this space, where we actually have no jurisdiction to mandate information about horses after their racing career, is we've developed our off-the-track community, which is incentive-driven traceability. And what we're trying to do there is, that's a place, a platform, and I encourage anyone who has an interest in a racehorse or just general interest in horses post-racing to go on there, because people can register just as a fan or an interested person, but they can also claim the off the track they've got. So what we're doing is, we saw it as an opportunity. At the moment, we've got about 25,000 followers on Facebook for off the track. So we said, so, you know, what if half of those people have one off the track horse and they tell us what horse they've got and where it is? That, imagine the difference that would make. So that's what we're trying to do. We're, so far, that launched in April. We've got over 2,000 people signed up and over 700 horses registered. So that's 700 horses that we didn't previously know where they were. And what's particularly exciting about that is 40% of those horses are 10 years old or more. And we know that the average age of retirement is 5. So we're capturing these horses into their second or third transition post-racing, and that's new information for us.
A lot of SMSs coming through here asking questions. I'll get to those in a moment. But I think one of the biggest questions from the racing industry, trainers, owners, is the 2% levy. Where is that going? How is that distributed? And you've given some good insights into that, which I'll get you to go through now. So what does that roughly equate to each year, that 2%?
Yeah, so the 2% is, well, we've calculated it to date, which is 18 months into the new prize money levy, which is 6.2 million. And what I think is very interesting about this is, if you think about if this is before, during and after racing welfare that we're trying to look at, we've got, say, 3,000 foals bred in Victoria each year, approximately 8,000 or 9,000 horses in training, and then 2,500 retiring. So that's a big pool of horses. And when you divvy that money up, I have done the maths, and it's about $400 a horse. And I think that that's an important way to look at it.
It doesn't sound enough.
No, it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be everything for every horse.
Yep.
What we have structured to set up is a framework that supports and facilitates everyone to be delivering in this space. So it won't be, not every horse will need its kitty. So that's why we've structured this with the initiatives that help the horses that need it.
Okay. And just a breakdown on that $6.8 million, how is it actually, distributed to the different aspects of equine welfare?
Yes. Yeah, so we've got veterinary services as a proportion of race day veterinary services are contributed. So that's for the during racing phase. That's 2.5 million. Complementing that is risk reduced racing. So ensuring that horses are racing injury free. That's research, the new subsidized diagnostic imaging. I think that's about 2 million also. We then go on to the visibility space, which is our that off-the-track community that we've spoken about. We've invested 1.7 million on that platform. And that's the sort of the foundations for traceability and post-racing for the future. And then in the post-racing program space, I think it's more like 1.5, I think, if you've got the figures in front of you.
It's 1.2 operational delivery.
1.2 operational delivery. Yeah, so that's the team. That's
yep.
That's grown from 2 to 7 in the last 18 months. Those are the people that are facilitating all these programs. Then we've got the
1.1 for post-racing programs.
Thank you. So those are the programs. And what we'll see in the coming years is that figure expand. So we'll see a greater focus on there, because what we've been doing is been developing these programs. So Reset's 12 months old. We're about to look at doing acknowledged retirement farms. That will build it. So all of the offerings in the post-racing space will grow. And then we've got one on safety net initiatives.
Yep, 500,000 on safety net and 700,000 culture and awareness.
Yeah, so safety net, that's looking at our foster program, which is about to release. We've already got our emergency aid and our on-site humane euthanasia program. And again, The euthanasia program launched in April, and that's new. Foster program's about to launch. So what we'll see is we'll see greater support in that space as well. But equally, our safety net, we would hope that we're not going to be having to spend too much in that space, because there's a lot we can do to avoid needing the safety net.
You mentioned the euthanasia, and I think that's an important one to speak about, because with the volume of horses we have, it's not possible to rehome all of them, and some horses are not able to be rehomed, whether it's through injury and temperament. So there needs to be a mature conversation about, well, what do we do with those horses in the most humane way possible?
Yeah, so that's very much what the onset humane euthanasia program is all about, is when the decision has been made by a responsible owner that that's the best welfare outcome, that we are incentivising it to be done at home, on site. So therefore the fund pays for the euthanasia. And what I think is important to note there is, as sort of we've alluded to, is these are for horses that have chronic injuries or illnesses where they're that rehoming is not the best welfare outcome for them, or maybe they are behaviourally dangerous. But what we want to get to the point is that this should never be the majority of our horses or anywhere near that. This is a safety net initiative that is for horses that need it. But what we should be aiming to do is having our horses retire from racing so that they are finding their second career.
As you said, this program's really only been ramped up in the last 18 months. So it's still very early. What's the future goals, and where do you see it going?
What we would like to have is the vision for the off the track community is to have that post racing platform where all of our post racing programs are going through there. So what we have is, long term, we know that this many horses retired, this many of them made their way into off-the-track homes without our help. So we know that those were super desirable and didn't need any assistance. We know that this many horses needed the reset program. We know that this many horses were actually unable to have competitive careers, and we had to find them companion homes. And this many horses needed the euthanasia program. And so that's probably a long-term goal, to understand what's happening to our horses post-racing. And then if we find that there's gaps in it, and how do we fill them? But also, if we find that a lot of our horses are sort of towards the less desirable stage, what can we do in their before and during racing lives that ensure that they are more desirable at post-racing? Let's reposition, if the average age of retirement is 5 years old, let's reposition racing as a first career. Like, it's a first career, and let's prepare them for their second career as well.
And this has all been, I suppose, born about following that 7:30 report and the public, I suppose, questions about racing and its safety from the equine perspective. How do you think we are getting that message across in the 18 months since that time through these programs, and what the wider community is now viewing with racing, and how we care for our horses, not just while they race, but after life as well?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I know that we struggle with cut through even within our own industry. So it's even harder to get the wider audience to listen. Obviously, the spotlight will be back on us in a couple of months. What we want to do is be ready. So we've got that is all there ready to go. But it's finding those opportunities to speak, as we know that good news doesn't really sell papers. Yep. or get that much attention. So what we're basically bolstering ourselves with lots of solid initiatives, great stories, that when people are ready to listen to it, we can get it out there. And from our perspective, our first step is, how do we make sure that our participants know this and believe that what we're doing, so that they can advocate for us?
Absolutely. And there's a couple of SMSs just on that funding, because I think there has been some trainers and owners who find the 2% a bit contentious, which I scratch my head at, because I think if we're all in this for the vision and the future of racing to be sustainable, it needs to have the wider aspect of those believing that the sport is an equine, humane industry to work in. So 2% to me doesn't seem to be that onerous. But we get SMSs every day saying, tell me more about this 2%. One here saying, why is the 2% or $2.5 million on race day veterinary services of that spend? Now, a lot of that is, you just recently announced the diagnostic testing, which was to be subsidised as well. And just to reiterate, what's the theory behind that? Because it's more prevention for injury, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a, so it's about, it's similar to the concept of, that we use in the post-racing space. How do we incentivize and support people to make good decisions? And if the question is, do we pay for this scan or do we take a risk? You want them to go, let's get the scan. So that's what it's doing. It's supporting that. And in relation to the vet services, when you look at that, the breakdown of the spend, it was $10 million in total, and the vet services element of it is easily covered by Racing Victoria's contribution. So I don't think that that's necessarily something...
Well, that's the other aspect too, which it's $6.8 million from the 2%, but it's actually a $10 million per year fund, is that correct?
Exactly.
And the rest is made up by Racing Victoria.
Well, yeah, so it's been $10 million in the last 18 months.
18 months.
So it's over, and then there'll be another $15 million over the next 18 months as things ramp up. And I think what's really interesting to consider about the 2%, as you alluded to, is it's about the wider industry. There will be some people that will never or may not on a day-to-day basis won't feel that 2% impacting them. But what it does for them is it supports the wider industry to assist in welfare where it's needed. And if they do have a horse that needs the reset program or needs the euthanasia program, it's there. It provides that safety net. But so, yes, every day they don't feel like they're getting it. But what it does is it provides a structure that gives them comfort.
Do you think we are making inroads? Do you think that this is the future that will underpin, I suppose, in 5 to 10 years' time, the industry?
I really do. I've worked at British Horse Racing for 8 years, and I've been at Racing Victoria for 7 now. And I didn't think we would ever get to this point in my career. The progress that we've made as an industry as a whole, the attitudinal change, I'm really excited about what we can do.
Jen, well, you're a big part of it as the GM of Equine Welfare at Racing Victoria. And if you look at the programs that you've already implemented in just this 18-month period, who knows what the next 18 months will deliver, because it's been huge already. And it is a thankless task in a lot of areas because people don't get to see the good work that you do front and centre, really. It's a lot of it is done behind the scenes. So I think well done to you and your team who work tirelessly. And it all comes down to the one thing, the love of the animal.
Absolutely.
Good on you, Jen. Jen Hughes, who is the General Manager of Equine Welfare Racing Victoria. 2%, another SMS, here's one that's just come through. Can I donate? Can we donate to the program if someone out there wants to donate?
You absolutely can. If you get in touch with Equine Welfare at racingvictoria.net.au, I can send the details.
Good on you, Jen.